Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
And you should cut that out, just in case JP's mother listens to this.
Yeah, right. She is baffled by email. She cannot download anything.
Can we cut all that stuff about my mom out?
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, and we distribute free monthly issues about music, arts, action sports, and subculture. We also do local CD reviews and national CD reviews. You can check all that out in the magazine and online. On this episode, we're going to delve into the pages of the Sugar House Review, talk Yelp and sushi with Jeffrey Stedman, and we'll be speaking about summer movies with Jimmy Martin. Sugar House Review is an independent poetry journal based out of Salt Lake City that was founded in 2009. The group released their first volume in October of 2009, and each collection contains works from writers and poets across the country, including some from Utah. They're sold in select online stores and through locally owned bookstores like Ken Sanders, The King's English, and Weller Bookworks. Slug's editorial assistant, Esther Moronio, talked with one of the publication's editors, Jerry Van Ypren.
Tell me a little bit about the history of the Sugar House Review. I know that you guys are celebrating your two-year anniversary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It started John Kippen, Nano Taggart, Natalie Young, and myself. I was in classes at Utah State with Natalie and Nano 1,000 years ago, and we started a writing group down here, and that went on for years, and then I wasn't there when they came up with the idea. I'm assuming beer was involved.
Yeah.
Because that sounds reasonable to put out a poetry magazine. So they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I thought, why not?
So why did you guys want to do it?
I think just because we felt like we could. Like, when we had our writing group, if we didn't have a poem to get critiqued, our rule was you had to bring in one you liked, and so we would just discuss poetry anyway. And so maybe it was ego to prove that we could make a good magazine, or at least think we could.
Uh-huh.
And it just seemed reasonable.
Okay. So you said that a few of you went to Utah State. Were you all students?
We were all students and poetry lovers.
Okay, so. And poetry lovers.
Yeah.
Okay. And were you all studying poetry at the time as well?
No. I think Natalie went into graphic design. I did journalism. But
okay.
we just happened to be in a couple of writing classes. And so it started like that.
So what is it that draws you to poetry?
I think that it's kind of a reflection of humanity, that you're not stuck watching reality TV, that there are people that have something to say and are willing to say it.
I know the poetry is very subjective, so how do you think that your background, I mean, you were saying that, you know, graphic design, you've got journalism, how do you think that your backgrounds help you pick these poems? Because I'm sure that you all have very different tastes.
We do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what helps the magazine come together. We've got a scoring system when submissions come in, where we'll rate it and give kind of an explanation of why we felt that way. And so that helps because we can see from each other's perspectives, pick up something new that we might have missed or someone else may have missed. So it's good for discussion because it gets us thinking, gets us more engaged with the magazine. So we just try and agree, and if the poem scores high enough with all our ratings, then we take it.
Can you kind of go into more detail on that process? Start with the submission, because you open it up to anyone, right? It's not just, even though you guys are based out of Sugar House in Salt Lake, you have poets from all over the country.
Right. We want to have notable poets, new poets. We started off trying to solicit some of our favorite poets just as we're establishing ourselves. And we want to have established poets, kind of renowned within the poetry community, poets, but also we're kind of proud of being from Salt Lake, and so we want to see local writers, and there are a lot of talented ones. So we're happy when we can publish them. And a couple times a year we do readings around town for the local poets that are in the Sugar House Review.
So how do people submit? Is it mostly on your website? I know you have kind of a submission form there. Or do people sometimes just mail them to you?
Occasionally we get the mailed submissions, like from prisons.
Yeah, we get those too.
You can relate. We prefer just through email. It's easier to track, and then we don't have to scan it in. But we do accept mailed-in submissions. So within our email system, we mark a submission, and then we just, at our own leisure, which I take a lot of time sometimes, we read the submissions and then just on a document kind of score it, what we felt about it, and then when everyone's gone through, then we can kind of decide and discuss.
And do you receive a considerable amount more than you can publish?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what sucks, is having to reject people. I've been rejected, so I kind of know.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing personal. I get between like 3 and 5 submissions a day, so that's, I don't know, English is more my thing than math, but like 1,400 a year.
Yeah.
And that's just submissions with up to 5 poems, so there is a lot of work to consider. We actually had to close submissions in October just because we're getting so overwhelmed as word gets around, so it's good and bad.
How many do you include in the magazine?
There's no set on that either. Our last issue was pretty big, over 100 pages. Mm-hmm. I think this one that's going to come out in early April will be about 80 pages of poetry and then reviews. So if we're getting a lot of good submissions, it's going to be bigger. I shouldn't say good. Like, poems that resonate with us that we want to include. And we have no guideline.
Okay.
On how big it's going to be, or small.
Okay, so you keep saying poems that resonate with you. So I guess you specifically, what do you look for in a poem?
Something that has feeling, something that has imagery, I don't know, it's just got a feel to it that I can't, I don't know, I guess it's like the Supreme Court with pornography. I know it when I see it, but yeah. I can't really define it.
Yeah, I've noticed that's kind of, because that's how I feel about poetry too, and I feel like, especially because you're also a poet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've noticed that other people who write poems, it's kind of hard to define their own craft sometimes.
I think it is. Yeah, it is hard to define. I think that probably is to our benefit, because without the definitions we can just kind of free flow and what we like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a pretty big variety in all our issues, which is good. I don't want to really be fit into like a certain niche poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Just want it to be all inclusive.
Yeah, I think that you guys did a really good job of having a variety of poems for sure. I mean, there were some that I, you know, whatever.
And I think, yeah, that's how I feel even. Like, there's some poems in it that I don't really care for, but maybe the other editors did, and vice versa. And I think that's a really good balance for us, because, again, it's kind of a question of accessibility, and with that broader base.
Do you ever get into arguments over which poems to include or to leave out?
We had to beg a couple of the editors to include one poem that started off, "Please don't refer to her vagina as a flower," a couple issues ago, and that was about as tense as it's gotten. We just state why we like or don't like, and see if we can persuade. But it's been pretty smooth so far.
And since your inception, have you brought on new editors, or is it kind of the same team, or do you guys kind of try to switch it up every year?
It's primarily the same. We've brought on a reviews editor that just handles the poetry reviews we get, and that's been super helpful. And we've got a reader that just helps us with the scoring of the poems. And we had an intern, and I think she got credit, so that was cool. but we haven't brought any other specific poetry editors, and I think we like just having it amongst ourselves in that way.
So how much time does it take to put all of this together? Because, I mean, you've got to read through all the submissions, decide what goes in, and then do all the layout, and then you always have a very unique cover. How long does that take?
Unfortunately, our editor, Natalie, does the layout and the cover, and so she's the one that gets burdened with that a few weeks before we go to press. But then it's basically half a year for each issue, so that's when we're reading and getting things compiled, rejecting and accepting poems.
What's your ultimate goal with the Sugar House Review? I know you guys are kind of new, but do you have like a five-year plan for it, or just kind of flying by the seat of your pants?
Definitely seat of our pants. None of us really had experience with publishing a poetry magazine, and so it's kind of been feeling our way through the dark. Our first issue won a Pushcart Prize, which is awarded to small presses for the best poetry fiction. That's really a huge honor for us. So I don't know if we've peaked already and it's all downhill from there. But I think just keep trying to put out a poetry magazine people enjoy.
Is there anything that, like, what are you excited for about this issue?
How the process is, how you're reading poems for 6 months, and then you've got to proof it, make sure all the periods are in the right place, capitalization, line breaks. That part's really daunting. I can't imagine Natalie laying it out what it must be like. And so it's kind of draining, but then you get it back from the printer, and it's really invigorating. Then people, you hear back from people, and that just kind of recharges us. You can go through the motions all again. And
cool.
So I'm just hoping people have the same feedback they've had for the other magazines.
And now selections from the Sugar House Review from poets Patrick Thomas, Kat Finch, and Nate Lederbach. Patrick's poem is entitled Death. If you don't mind, please come to the front of the class. Kat's is Wake, and Nate's is Please Stay on the Trail. They will be read in that order by the authors.
Death, if you don't mind, please come to the front of the class. Teacher adjusts the half moons of her glasses, her chalk ticking against the slate in three crumbling clicks, and dust sprinkles like incense, ash cast from a silver thurible onto the sooty eraser's plastic catafalque ledge, and the boy pushes himself off by his elbows, his black sweatshirt, sizes too big, gathers over his bony hips, and the roomy-eyed class mute, expressionless, turns aside, turns pale, turns to limestone white, blue vein note paper, and the boy steps to teacher's tallies, graphite powder, chalk dust, graveling the path beyond a roster of the listless and the inattentive, the absent.
Wake. He's a hypnic jerk in my ear, he's a hypnic jerk. And he got blue knees, yeah, he got blue knees, he's a cosmic squeeze. Baby bound bowline, hook and sinker, so the butter is mellow, feeling all sorts of yellow. Let it go, let it go, let it go, let it snow, repeat times three. I let you pop rocks and sodas and slew, almost make it true. This isn't a poem about you, cosmic blue in an old black shoe. It's about tenfold and coming on fast or slow. Shit red bike and a 40, hey no, now not nearly 42. 42 is never not you. Atlantic, pedantic, and neurotic too. Homily, anomaly, since you're 2 miles blue. Blue, squeeze, let out the T's, let loose the T's, take it home. Bite, 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 sauce, sass, squash, bleach, dead bleach, legs, not so cosmic, you electro-funk fool, put past the ears and the ears, put past the you, break it blue, and a hypnic jerk, just a picnic jerk, he's a hypnic jerk, the ear whore you, soft blue knees, nobody ever did never say, please.
Please stay on the trail. Please stay on the trail. The trail depends on you, deepening with each parceled footfall, heels and boots, toes and toenails, needed to keep brush back, spine aligned, soil packed, please. Stay on the trail, depending not on where you're going, but when you're groaning, wear is worn down to pleading, please. The trail balls at your feet, tail done, tucked, cadence, bowing limbs, trees, canopies of exegesis. Jesus, please. Trailing is not falling, not behind, when behind's a problem of narrow. The road home, the homos or whores, a lone leper dragging dried blood for the things in trees, clicking long teeth. Thirsty, but this well is empty. The prodigal. binged out, gone down the trail, haunted, throat diesel, choked, thumb a nub off interstate winds, and around the next bend, a lamb's realizing it can read codes on white t-shirts, chrome-cased bumper stickers as wilder nests. Now the small voice stills, its terror of wandering is wrong, though not all who follow are led, unequally yoked, my load appended to egg you on, make you stay the trail for a while. Please, we'd love to see you smile.
Volume 6 is being released this week and will be available for $7 at local shops and on the Reviews website in PDF format. For more about the series and to buy current and back issues, visit them online at sugarhousereview.com. Dracula is a solo experimental project from Seth Cook. Cook takes various instruments, loops of live samples, and his own beatboxing to make a one-man band with a unique sound. On March 31st, Dracula released his debut album, Sounds by Dracula. Here's Jimmy's Basement. That was Jimmy's Basement from the new Dracula album. To download the entire full length, check out dracula.bandcamp.com. That's G-I-R-A-F-F-U-L-A. And for more information on Cook's project and future concert dates, visit facebook.com/dracula. About once a month or so, we are joined by Jeffrey Stedman of Yelp. He's the community manager of the website and app that has people from all walks of life comment on different businesses and their experiences there. Thank you for joining us once more, Jeffrey.
Hey, man, I'm happy to be here. I sound very manly today. I mean, I always sound manly, but today especially, so I'm a little under the weather, but I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for coming out regardless.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to talk about one of my favorite things, and that, of course, would be food, as usual, and sushi is one of the topics that we've picked to cover. And I'd like to hear what the Yelpers out there have to say about all the great local sushi joints.
Yeah, well, it's a massive topic, right?
It is.
I feel like in the last 5 or 10 years, sushi all over the world, especially the United States, has really exploded. There's a ton of places you can go. I did a quick search. There were, just in Salt Lake City, or like the Valley, there were 85 sushi places that popped up. So you do have a ton of options out there. So, we're going to tackle a few of them and see what Yelpers are saying about a few of them. The most reviewed sushi place on Yelp, and actually one of the most reviewed places in Salt Lake, Takashi. And I don't think that's any surprise. It's a really great sushi place, 18 West Market Street. Check this out. After 223 reviews, it has a 4.5 out of 5-star rating on Yelp. That's pretty amazing.
That's huge.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you do, I think, when there's so much content out there is there's some really neat tools within Yelp to kind of narrow down what people are talking about. There's a little bit, snippets at the start of the listing on Yelp, and it has review highlights. And so you see what common things keep coming up as people review. And so one of the things that people are definitely giving a shout out to is the Strawberry Fields roll, which, as the name would indicate, has a little bit of strawberry in it. The Black Magic Woman roll, which has a little bit of like red pepper, roasted red pepper in it. But you know, it is kind of one of these new, I don't want to say new age, but you know, it's got a few like creative twists and turns, especially as the rolls come along. But don't overlook like the classic sashimi and the classic, nigiri, those kinds of things that that really define what a great sushi place is. I think it really has the whole package.
Yeah, I've had the Strawberry Fields before.
And
it's amazing. And they have a few other Beatles-themed rolls, and they're good. I think there's a Yellow Submarine, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, absolutely.
Probably one of my favorite sushi experiences ever happened there. It was a tuna tartare with truffle sauce, and it was just amazing.
Yeah, Takashi definitely has a good on. I will say, also, if you're in the downtown area, do not overlook Naked Fish Japanese Bistro, which is 67 West, 100 South. 4 out of 5 after 103 reviews, so definitely well vetted. In those review highlights, like I mentioned, 32 Yelpers call out the sashimi. So this is kind of, they do have some rolls and things, but it's definitely a little more classic, and they take a lot of pride in like the pure, fresh fish aspect. So as the name would indicate, Naked Fish, I mean, just go straight down to the Naked Fish. It's really great, and it's also a really sexy space and much bigger than you'd imagine. So if you have a bunch of people you want to entertain or whatever, it's a great option.
And unlike Takashi, they have both a dining room and then the more traditional partitioned Japanese dining rooms that you can go into where you sit down and take your shoes off and everything like that. So it offers a slightly different experience than Takashi while still being downtown and really, really tasty.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you want to talk about pure, like classic sushi, I think you have to talk about Kyoto, which is 1080 East, 13th South, 4 out of 5 stars after 61 reviews. I do want to read just a little bit what Stuart M says, because he encapsulates what Kyoto is all about. He says, "You won't get any fancy schmancy rolls, cream cheese, or deep fried shenanigans. Don't expect a trendy atmosphere, loud music, or cooler than thou service staff. What you come to Kyoto for is consistently great, fresh, traditional Japanese fare." I think he sums it up right there. I mean, this is, you're not after the frou-frou stuff. This is like classic Japanese food and sushi.
Yeah, I've never been there before. I've seen it. I think it's close to Liberty Heights, if I'm not mistaken. It's kind of in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, right down there. It's 13 South.
Yeah, but I've never been there. Have you?
I have not had sushi there.
Right.
Sadly, and I have a standing date with someone. We're going to go check it out. But I think there's, those are some of the most reviewed and kind of gives you both sides of it. But there are some really great, like, gems out there that you just wouldn't know about unless people were talking about it. I think the classic point is Sushi Express. This is like a little strip mall sushi place. I mean, it's pretty tiny. There's not seating for more than, I don't know, maybe 20 people in there, maybe.
And where is that?
That's 78 to 24 South, 700 East, in between a pizza place and a 7-Eleven.
Well, you can't go wrong. That's a great location. Location, 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 as they say, right?
That's it. That's it. And cozy, as the realtors say. But yeah, it's really affordable, but it's still really fresh. I don't think they're like turning the sushi world on its ear. But the thing about that is they have some really loyal customers. You look through, again, different Yelpers. Scott D, 45 check-ins there. Ryan S, 25 check-ins. I have like 3 check-ins. You know, people go back and go back and go back again because it's a great, like, affordable place to pick up some sushi, especially if you're down in the South Valley. The prices are great. For example, the special number letter G, a tuna roll, a salmon roll, a California roll, soup, and a salad for $11.75.
Is that all the time? That's not lunch? That's just regular?
That's actually the dinner price. They have some lunch specials as well, which are more affordable.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's just some kind of fun, different sushi places out there. I think we'll talk about, let's see, Ichiban, right? On 336 South, 400 East, 3.5 out of 5 after 42 reviews. Cool part about that is really the food's good, but the cool part about that is really the building is like this old church, so you're sitting there having sushi, checking out stained glass windows. It's a righteous, holy, don't look at me like that.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
It's a spiritual experience, man.
Right. And they've got some patio seating for the summertime, which is another feature I like about that place.
Yeah.
Can't find at all sushi joints.
Yeah. If you're checking out, looking for a patio sushi joints, I think the be-all, end-all, Sapa.
Yes.
You've been down to Sapa, 722 South State Street. Amazing patio.
Mm-hmm.
These old tea houses that they actually brought over and rebuilt there. In the back, like this courtyard completely surrounded by a fence, very Mr. Miyagi kind of moment.
And they've got a koi pond or some little pond back there. And if you're sitting down, you can almost not see the pawn shop sign from across the street. So you're transported to somewhere else. There's the top of a pawn shop sign. But, you know, mostly.
It's a mostly magical place.
Yeah, you're in Japan.
I mean, you're right off of State Street and you really kind of lose yourself there for a second. So, you know, that's definitely. And the inside is very sexy too. The patio's not open. Some very cool lighting, very cool ambiance.
Yeah, they have some blown glass light fixtures and some really cool art on the walls. There's like this chalk piece on the wall that's done in Japanese style. And they've got really good pho if you want to check that out. Call back to an earlier episode, yeah.
There you have it. There you have it. Another pho shout out.
Well, the owners of Sapa actually own Green Papaya in West Valley, which is a well-known pho joint.
Yes, indeed.
And Bucket of Crawfish. And,
yes, also Bucket of Crawfish.
Very rare, or very varied, rather.
It's the trifecta.
Yeah.
You have a pho place, a crawfish place, and a sushi place.
Man, I got
it. Every man's dream. The same old story. Let's see what else we have here that we wanted to... another South Valley for our friends in the South Valley, Sakana. 4 out of 5 after 24 reviews. It's out in Jordan Landing, 7626 Campus View Drive. Just another really, like, surprising, good restaurant out there. A lot of Yelpers really got really wordy about how much they love this place because it is just such a break from, you know, some of the other sushi places that are around. I mean, there's a lot of them around. You really have to, I guess, find your groove.
That's a pretty good rating, that 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Speaking of grooves, anything on the East Bench that you can...
I really didn't mean to transition into sushi.
I was wondering if you were doing that.
How about that segue? No. Sushi Groove, 2910 South Highland, 4 out of 5 stars, 29 reviews. I haven't eaten there, but the Yelpers are telling me in those review highlights, dessert rolls.
Oh yeah, I was gonna bring that up.
Tempura Oreos.
I haven't had that one, but their other dessert rolls are great. Tempura Oreos, sold.
Right.
Sold.
Can't go wrong. So yeah, I mean, sushi, that's the thing. I believe there's room in the universe for all kinds of sushi. It's the same way I feel about pizza. People get so passionate about what kind of pizza they like or what kind of sushi is the right kind or the wrong kind. Can't we all just get along and just grab some chopsticks, have some sushi? There's all kinds in Salt Lake, and it's really, really good. I think that surprises people not from Utah, but it's a plane ride away and a short plane ride away. So there's some fresh, great, delicious, tasty sushi options. And if you don't remember anything else, remember that.
A caveat to that, make sure you're not eating terrible fish, though. You know, go to a sushi joint that's reviewed well on Yelp, and make sure that a lot of the reviewers aren't dead from some sort of bacterial or fungal infection, whatever it is you get from fish.
Yeah. And, you know, if there's a great place out there that any of the folks listening love. Certainly the 85, we can't cover them all today, but if there's other places, get on Yelp and tell your fellow Yelpers, your fellow Salt Lake citizens about it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it's all about, is discovering those places, hearing from other people, and going out and trying them, because there's some amazing things out there we just want to hear about.
And if you have a smartphone, you recommend downloading the app or just going to the website.
Yep, download the free app on any mobile platform that there is, or go to yelp.com and sign up. It's free.
All right, thanks for joining us once again, Jeffrey Stedman. I really feel like we've thoroughly covered sushi. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Esther. What's up? Do you want to do the daily weekly calendar rundown?
The weekly daily calendar?
That's what
rundown?
I meant. It's not like it's written right in front of me. Sorry.
I would love to.
And Tuesday, April 17th is where we should start, I guess. Might as well start somewhere. Let's start with Tuesday.
Tuesday's a good day.
Do you like symphonic renditions of soundtrack music?
I do.
Well, then I've got some good news.
No way.
The Utah Symphony is presenting the magical music of John Williams at Abravanel Hall.
Ooh, he's the guy that did Star Wars and Indiana Jones and other
literally thousands more. Literally.
That should be fun.
And Wednesday, April 18th, the day after that, we've got something a little bit more, gritty, grungy, rockery.
Yeah, metal.
That's a good word for it.
Mm-hmm.
We should use that.
Well, we've got Behemoth, Watain, and The Devil's Blood, and In Solitude playing at the Complex. And we actually have an article in this April issue about Behemoth, so check that out.
And then go see the show.
Mm-hmm.
The day after, of course, the beginning of the weekend, and another opportunity for the Utah Symphony to show what they can do with a tribute to the Beatles at Abravanel Hall.
I am so stoked about that.
I know. Which is your favorite Beatles album?
Probably the White album.
And Saturday, that, by the way, runs for 2 days, so if you don't catch it on Friday, you can catch it on Saturday.
Yep.
And Saturday, April 21st, I've got a Gray Whale metal show. It's for Record Store Day. Have you heard about Record Store Day?
Have I heard about Record Store Day?
Yeah.
If you pick up an issue of this month's Slug, you can actually see some really awesome comics about Record Store Day. So some comics depicting funny stories from local record stores. So check out our Record Store Day coverage, along with this metal showcase.
Gaza, Invaders, Eagle Twin, and Cornered by Zombies will be playing the Napalm Flesh Presents Record Store Day metal show from 6 to 10 at the Gray Whale in Sandy.
Yeah, should be a really fun show.
It will be. I will be there, so that's a guaranteed fun time right there.
I will probably be there too, so that's like guaranteed fun times too.
So pick us out of the crowd by our voices, people that listen to the podcast, and come say hi, because it's guaranteed fun times too. And Sunday, April 22nd.
Happy birthday to Megan Kennedy. She is one of our Napalm Flesh and just regular Slug contributors, along with being a photographer. And I think she's been on the podcast before too. So.
Yes, she has.
You should be well familiar with her.
We all are now at this point. And Monday, April 23rd. Why don't you tell people what's going on at Saltgrass Printmakers?
Well, Craft Lake City has a workshop series. It's kind of an extension of the festival. And they do it every other month, and they have one of the Craft Lake City alum come and show you how to make a cool craft. And so on Monday, there's going to be a crafting session with Nicolette Miller, and she's going to be showing you how to do letterpress Mother's Day cards.
That's really cool.
I know. I'm always trying to figure out what to get my mom that's something different, because, you know, mom's like handmade stuff. So I think this will be a good thing that I've never done before.
My mom likes cookbooks, actually.
Cookbooks?
I don't think she would like a handmade cookbook either. So some moms like handmade stuff. It's a caveat. Is that Mother's Day around there too? I'm a terrible son, by the way. I don't know. Is that
Mother's Day is in May?
Okay, great. Yep. Then we're
yeah. So that gives you plenty of time to make something or buy a cookbook.
No, I'm just gonna buy the cookbook the day of, if that's all right with everybody.
Where else can someone maybe find about these events? Or download, listen to the podcast, JP.
You may be talking about our Slug app. I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb there and say that.
I think I might be.
It's for the iPhone. It's available for free. You can read past issues of the magazine. You can read current issues of the magazine. You can drop us a line. You can actually call our voicemail line from the app, and you can listen to the podcast. You can do all that, as well as view the daily calendar, which is what we've just been talking about, all on your phone. If you don't want to do that on the phone, of course, pick up a hard copy of Slug Magazine. It's in the back there. It's the very last few pages you'll find the calendar, and you can check it out on the website.
Yeah.
It's on the front page.
That's what your mom will be doing, is reading the daily calendar in the back of the magazine, right?
I'm sure. She'll be clipping some of the recipes out of Slug, all our recipes, for low-fat muffins. Hey, thanks for joining us again, Esther.
Thanks, JP.
Spirit Master is a psychedelic rock band based out of Salt Lake. The band is comprised of Matthew Carl Palopoulos, Joshua McCafferty, Jamie Tim, and Brent Matthew Dreiling. The band opened for the Flaming Lips in September of 2011, and they recently released their self-titled debut EP on March 31st. Here's Old Enough to Know from Spirit Master's EP. That was Old Enough to Know from the self-titled EP from Spirit Master. It's currently available for $7 at spiritmaster.bandcamp.com. To find out more about the group, search for Spirit Master on Facebook. We are joined once more by one of my favorite people to talk to here on the podcast, Jimmy Martin, resident film critic here at Slug Magazine. How are you doing, Jimmy?
How do you do? How's it going?
I'm great, thanks. I wanted to talk to you about one of the most important things in any young man's life.
Movies?
Well, prostate exams, but we can talk about movies.
Okay,
first.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
It's a silent killer.
I didn't bring the gloves.
Oh, that's all right, then. We'll just talk about movies. Okay. How about that?
Sure.
Absolutely. Summer movies, specifically.
Yeah, it's coming.
I'm really excited for this season.
I love that summer has pretty much started. I mean, we say summer movies, generally it's May to August, but it's kind of funny. It's getting earlier and earlier every year. I mean, some people would say that the summer's already started with, like, Hunger Games and, you know, movies like that. But, yeah, it's getting early, but it's coming. I think summer is starting with the Avengers. And then I kind of don't care anymore. Life means nothing after
I've not
that.
Heard of this Avengers movie. Is it a revenge thing? I'm not
no,
sure.
No,
what is
no,
it? What's
no.
going on?
It's pretty much the biggest comic book movie that's ever going to hit the screens.
Oh, you know what? I did hear about it.
Is that... It's what Marvel's been building up for the past, what, 7 years now?
Did Jon Favreau direct that?
No. Actually, Favreau's done. Favreau directed Iron Man 1 and 2, and his experience with Marvel, he did not appreciate during Iron Man 2, so he left, and the seat went to Joss Whedon. So
of Firefly and Bucky
the Vampire Slayer, yeah.
Bucky Larson?
Yeah, no.
I confused the two.
Mr. Whedon, yeah. So, I mean, if anybody's going to handle, you know, seven superheroes in one film, pretty much Joss Whedon's the guy who's going to do it. And so that's what makes me so excited for it. Every time I see a trailer, I squeal like a little girl.
It must be awkward for people you're with.
Not really. It's kind of fun.
So that's kind of the biggest comic book movie of the summer. Are there others that are still coming out?
Yeah, I mean, down the road, I mean, we can jump around a little bit if we want to. There's two other big comic book movies, I'd say. Dark Knight Rises is coming out, so Christopher Nolan's going to... Apparently, this is the one that ends it all with Christian Bale, and then you've got Tom Hardy as Bane, Anne Hathaway as Catwoman. It looks badass, I love The Dark Knight. I think Dark Knight is one of the greatest comic book movies ever made. Heath Ledger's performance, you know, that was probably one of the saddest things when he did die, because... he had just begun to show what he could really do. Mm-hmm. And we just got into a debate the other night, and they said if he hadn't died, do you think he would have won the Oscar? And I absolutely think he would have. So I can only imagine how they're going to try to top that one.
Well, Tom Hardy is pretty good.
Tom Hardy's good, and he's a beast, dude.
He is.
He's got no neck.
I did notice that. I was watching The Warrior recently, and I imagine that it would be really hard to knock him out.
Yeah. No,
like, choke him out, literally.
Oh, God. Him as Bane's going to be a lot of fun. And then, let's see, and then the other big comic book movie is The Amazing Spider-Man. So they're going to redo that one. Pretty much Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire, who are, you know, together for the three, are off the project completely. And now you've got Mark Webb, no pun intended on that one, doing the kind of the next chapter. It's instead of Gwen Stacy, no, instead of Mary Jane, like Kirsten Dunst's character, it's Gwen Stacy.
Emma Stone, right?
Yeah, Emma Stone.
And Andrew Garfield is Spider-Man.
Andrew Garfield is Spider-Man. He's from, you know him as from Social Network. He's the nerdy CFO.
Of course.
I think he makes a pretty good, you know, from what I've seen, he looks like he could pull Peter Parker off pretty well. I mean, Parker's a nerd. He looks like one. They're just going to have extra fabric on the suit around his neck, because that guy's got the longest neck I've ever seen.
Is there going to be some blowback for comic book movies, you think, after this summer? It's going to be so huge, all about comics.
I do question where it's going to kind of go. I mean, they're already talking about Avengers 2, so you're going to get more of those. But it's going to be kind of weird going back to, like, they're going to make Iron Man 3. That's in 2013 with directed by Shane Black, who just pretty much the only directing credit he's got to his name is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is pretty one of the films that brought Robert Downey Jr. back. And it was Robert Downey Jr. who said, I want Shane to direct this. And the guy's an amazing writer. Films like Lethal Weapon, Last Boy Scout, stuff like that. So it's going to be a very dialogue-driven Iron Man 3. But it's going to be weird to not have, like, you know, seven superheroes again. You know, so it'll be interesting to see. And then the other thing that you're going to try to see is DC, who's usually 9 times out of 10, always right behind Marvel. What they need to do is, now that Nolan's done with his Batman, is make Justice League. So then you've got Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman. Like, it's pretty much their version of the Avengers. So I think you're probably going to see that soon. I think the guy who took over Warner Brothers said that's one of his first decisions to do is to do a Justice League. So I don't. I think they're going to get bigger. Whedon just actually was said that Avengers 2 will actually be smaller. I don't know how much creative control he's going to have over that, because most studios don't want to go smaller. They want to go bigger yeah. and better. You know. We've seen that in Michael Bay movies, and usually sometimes that can mean awful, awful things.
I've heard that's not always true. It's the motion of the movie.
It's not how big it is. It's not the length, it's the girth. Yeah.
Something like that, sure. Just a wider movie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then kind of moving away from comic books, though, movie-wise this summer, one that I was excited about it, but the more and more I see about it, is Ridley Scott's Prometheus. And essentially, it's come out that it is an Aliens prequel.
Right, or Charlize Theron.
Yeah, Charlize Theron, Michael Fassbender. I'm sure they're going to have some other people popping up in there.
Will there be an alien?
Maybe. Who knows? It's pretty much it's kind of, you find out where the space jockey came from. If you ever watch the opening of Alien, there's a crash ship. You know, they get the distress signal. So it's kind of like where that came from. So that it just looks really good. Like, it looks like Ridley Scott's going back to his, you know, core of sci-fi movies, which the guy's a genius at. I mean, I love him.
When is that coming out?
That is in June, I believe. That's, let's see, June 8th. That one looks really good. Some other ones, it's funny because now we just had this screen from Mirror Mirror, and there was this whole battle about Snow White movies. For the love of God, Mirror Mirror is a piece of shit. So I don't know why Snow White and the Huntsman was so upset that Mirror Mirror was coming before it, because they just paved the way that there's... I cannot see it being worse than that. If the trailers from Snow White and the Huntsman look really good...
They do.
Except for Kristen Stewart's in it, and she can't
that
act for shit.
Of course, well, yeah.
She is awful. She's an awful, awful person, and I don't want to hear any more from it. And then, right, that's on June 1st, and then actually the week before that is the trilogy I never wanted to see be made, and it's Men in Black 3. And,
I thought you were going to say The Hunger Games.
No,
you
I know.
The solution
you know what? I'll watch The Hunger Games 1,000 times before I really ever would want to watch Men in Black 3. What happened to Will Smith? I mean, he used to be kind of cool, right?
I hope he's going
to
have a theme song for this.
He's not. He's totally not.
Why see it?
I don't want to see it anymore. Yeah, they already made a hip-hop song. I think the guy's name's Pitbull. Some random, you know, rapper. Then it's called... Back in Time.
Oh no!
Because it's a time traveling movie, and I go, did he? I listened to it. It's awful, but I thought he had done a remake of Huey Lewis's Back in Time. Thank God he didn't.
And that's actually attached to the soundtrack for MIB3.
Yeah.
That's what we call it in the industry.
MIB, the MIB.
MIB3, yeah.
I call it the MIB 3.
Exactly.
Now, it just looks so terrible. I mean, I love Josh Brolin, and apparently he's playing a young Tommy Lee Jones. And from the trailers, great. He sounds like Tommy Lee Jones. Couldn't give more than a shit. That's about it.
Is a Will Smith son playing a young Will Smith?
He'll probably end up somewhere in there.
Let's pimp him out as much as possible.
What about him and Jada Pinkett? Will probably be a girl agent. God, you know, that family, Jesus.
These are all kind of sci-fi and fantasy movies. Give me something a little more solid. Give
solid?
Something a lady is going to cry on my shoulder.
You know, Pixar usually makes pretty good movies.
Okay.
Pixar's got one coming out June 22nd called Brave, and it's... A story about a little Irish, I think she's a princess, and she's a warrior, and red-haired, like, you know, red, like, or orange hair, whatever.
That's going to get some tears.
I love Pixar.
Sure.
To me, Pixar has, I used to say it all the time, I used to say Pixar could do no wrong until Cars 2 came out, and they really fucked that one up.
That's just Larry the Cable Guy.
Why would you use Larry the Cable Guy? Jesus, I mean, he makes history show channels now. Go away. But, I mean, the only reason that movie sucked is because it was totally driven by merchandise, and I can understand, you know, if you want to make some money. Cars is their number one franchise for toy selling, so fine. You made your money. Now go make some better shit. But I'm looking forward to it. I always look forward to a Pixar movie. And the same day is another one coming out. More geekies. It's Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
That is more geeky. Incrementally. Exponentially, I mean. Yeah.
It's pretty much as geeky as you can get beyond the Avengers. I think that looks really cool, though. It's, I'm trying to think. It's the Russian. I think he's Russian. The Tamar or something. He directed Wanted and Daybreak and all those movies.
The vampire movies?
Absolutely, right?
Yeah. Wanted was pretty all right.
I think Wanted's badass. It's got a lot of style to it, so I like that one.
Timur Blashkovich.
Yeah,
that guy.
Let's see, what else is coming out? June 29th, you've got the sequel to G.I. Joe. I don't know. Bruce Willis is
in it. Well, The Rock is in it, too.
Well, you know what? I actually like The Rock.
Well, why would you
dislike
him? As
shameful as that is, no. I think the guy's got comedic timing. I mean,
he does.
He was probably one of the only reasons to watch Journey 2, but he was actually funny in Fast and the Furious 5.
Wait, I was wondering, did Journey 2 actually come out?
Yeah,
or did it just go straight to video?
No, it came out.
Oh.
It shouldn't have. It should have gone straight to a sci-fi.
Yeah.
But because Michael Caine wanted to be in it, apparently it's good enough to be in the theaters. But that one looks... Bruce Willis is in it. Bruce Willis is G.I. Joe, so I don't know, though. Bruce is kind of making some bad decisions lately. He was in a Sundance movie that was awful, and so I'm kind of mad at him.
Bruce Willis was in an awful Sundance movie?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what it was called, but it was probably one of the worst movies I saw at Sundance.
Whoa.
And it was bad. August 3rd, The Bourne Legacy is coming out. So this is the moving on sans Matt Damon. It's now Jeremy Renner, who is pretty much the actor who is showing up in everything.
Yeah.
He's in The Avengers. He's in that. He was just in Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. And I like him. He's a great actor. I think he's good. So he'll show up in that one. The trailer looks badass. Another movie that's coming out same day, and this is where I'm starting to feel old, or Hollywood's running out of ideas too much more quickly now. I think it's the latter, hopefully. But they're remaking Total Recall. And,
I heard about this.
And it's Colin Farrell. God, who else is in there? Jessica Biel, Bryan Cranston. And they just came out with the trailer, I think yesterday. And it looks cool. I won't lie, but I don't want... a remake of Total Recall. Unless there's a chick with three tits in it, then it's fine.
What if I told you there was a chick with three tits in it?
Then it'd be my number one movie of the summer.
Well, I've got some good news. I don't know.
Damn it. Well, then we'll just have to sit there and wait.
But I liked the original. I mean, even Schwarzenegger is not the best actor, but it had some...
He's not the best. He's awful.
All right. So he's the worst actor. But that was the worst.
And then wrapping it all up, kind of... Here's a good segue, because the last one of the summer that I think it's going to close it out, because Arnold's in it now that he's not the Governator anymore. Expendables 2. This is a man movie.
It's a heartwarming tale, too.
Oh, hell yeah. But it's funny, because everybody that kind of wasn't in the first one, and for those who don't know, Expendables is pretty much every 80s and 90s action star, even present day with Jason Statham, just crammed into like one movie, who gives a shit about a plot, and just blow things up.
For that very reason alone, it's not that bad.
No, it's just what it is. So now they've added Jean-Claude Van Damme, yes. Which I love it because he said no to the first one. And it's like, what are you doing, Jean-Claude? I'm sure you're not that busy.
And then Expendables made like $120 million or something.
Yeah, and then it blew up. And he's like, oh, maybe I should have done it. Chuck Norris is in it now. But you know what? Fuck Chuck Norris. Because apparently the rumor is that because of him, it is now a PG-13 movie instead of the first one was a hard R.
Definitely.
And now...
Wait, what? It's PG-13? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
To me?
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah, it's bullshit, so...
I'm out. I'm not gonna see it.
But I have a feeling they'll change it. I don't know. Shit. If they don't, fuck you, Chuck Norris. And that's about it. That's the summer. I mean, it's crazy. There's things we didn't mention. Was it like there's Tim Burton's Dark Shadows is coming out. And which, I don't know, I think it looks... cheesy, but has the potential to be funny.
Based on a TV series?
Based off the vampire kind of soap opera show, yeah. And if I ever heard right, Burton said he doesn't like the TV version. It's kind of his... I think it's the same thing he said about Batman when he did that. He's like, I don't read comics.
Well, wait, Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter are going to be in it, though, right? No, so it'll be good.
So is Michelle...
Wait, are they really going to be in it?
Oh, yeah.
I was just joking.
No, Johnny Depp's totally the main character, and Helena Bonham Carter's in it, obviously, because she needs a paycheck.
Of course.
And can't got to rely on hubby.
Yeah.
And
he's not making enough money.
Actually, they're not married. I heard that they have a house that, like, connects or something like that. They live, like, right next to each other.
I thought they're not married.
No, they're just, like, live-ins. And Michelle Pfeiffer's in it, so Burton's Catwoman.
Not so that bad.
It looks okay. I don't know. That one, it's a coin flip. So, but that's it. That's your summer.
It sounds like a lot of action movies, a lot of comic book movies. Basically, what summers are made of, popcorn.
Popcorn flicks. And drool and just turn your brain off and enjoy. Because, you know, you're not going to get a good performance out of Arnold yet again.
Right. He was only in the last movie for like 30 seconds.
Well, he was still governor. So he didn't have the time. He was busy.
Now, I hope for more Arnold this time, then. Fingers crossed.
Now he's out of the office banging maids and making movies.
Shit.
It's the American dream.
Well, thanks again for stopping by, Jimmy.
Yeah, and thank
also,
you.
Also, I'd recommend that people check out your movie show. You got a movie show with Jeff Weiss.
Yeah, it's the Big Movie Mouth Off. You can catch us. I always say just go to our Facebook page. It's where we tell you everything you can know about that show.
And it's your season for a lot of giveaways and things like that and special offers. So stick closely to your Facebook page and your Twitter updates. And you'll let people know when they get into movies.
Pretty much every movie I just named, I would honestly guarantee, but we'll probably have 95 to 100% of them free screenings.
That's cool.
So you can just join the Facebook page and come see them all for free.
And as usual, of course, you can check out your movie reviews in the back of Slug Magazine.
Absolutely.
Kind of near the back, maybe like 2/3 of the way through.
It's like 7 pages in.
7 pages in.
That's my contract. I have no idea. All right.
Well, thank you for filling your monthly contract dues by being on the show.
It's my community service. Yeah. Like, I've got 7 more years of this.
Oh, shit.
I robbed that place clean. All right, I gotta go.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. What was the first comic book that you ever read? Do you remember? What memorable titles got you interested, if any? Send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a voice message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. We may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's show, we're going to be profiling Thunderfist, finding out about the latest music from Cannibal Corpse and PETA.